This is a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. Go to allthews.3cr.org.au.
It's 5 o'clock on Friday afternoon. My name's Jacob.
Well, I must be Mercedes then. And we're on Community Radio 3CR with Friday Rave.
That's right. It's back on Friday afternoon. It's actually Thursday afternoon, but you're tuned into Community Radio 3CR for a Friday Rave for, and also in June it's Radiothon. So for the second week of Radiothon.
So all you slackers out there that haven't contributed yet, haven't opened your dusty purses, your wallets or your online bank accounts or your cryptocurrency wallets. It's about time that you did.
Yeah, that's right. And thanks to everyone who has contributed to a Friday Rave, because we've made our target. You!
Oh, well, I thought we weren't going to tell them that.
Oh,
but
sorry.
We need to make more than our target. Our target is the baseline. Our target is the baseline. We need to keep pumping this cash in to 3CR coffers so that we can finally get to a position where we could take on the Murdoch Empire. Dollar for dollar and voice for voice.
Yeah, that's right. And we were talking before earlier, the racist fuckwit Tucker Carlson did an interview with Ted Cruz, which is doing the rounds on social media. And, everyone was kind of shocked that someone like Tucker Carlson would actually question Ted Cruz on a potential US invasion in Iran and what that looked like. And everyone's like, oh, no, Tucker Carlson is answering this. And we're saying this is not because Tucker Carlson's any sort of good bloke.
No.
It's because there's a complete lack of the mainstream media asking and what questions journalists and media should be asking when we're on the brink of World War III and during an ongoing genocide.
No one. Yeah. Well, it's like we've all had that experience, or we've been working with people, and there's always been this one person who's a total asswipe, let's face it. And then suddenly, one Tuesday afternoon in the lunchroom, they say something actually that you agree with, and you have that real feeling of disassociation or something. That's what we're having with Tucker Carlson. But yeah, he's an asswipe, but he said he's just maybe, perhaps, not quite an asswipe as Ted Cruz.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he is. Sorry, he is. Anyway.
But I guess, in when we kind of making that and like being surprised at someone, I think it speaks more about the failure of mainstream media.
It does.
And then I guess leading into Radiothon, this is why community radio is important, because they're the questions that we ask here on 3CR and why 3CR is such an important place of our little community-led radio station is one of the few places on this continent that you'll hear the actual truth and the hard questions that should be being asked by mainstream media, but they're not. And that's why it's so important to keep it going and that to keep this station on air for not only another year, but for many years to come.
For another 10, at least. At least. Now, having said that, I just realised we're recording in the virtual studio at the back of the Thumping Pig at the moment, and it's Thursday afternoon, as Mercedes said. But we sort of got a bit of out of practice that. We forgot to say, you're listening to a Friday Rave on Community Radio 3CR, broadcasting to you at 855 kilohertz on your old school AM dial through 3CR Digital, all the W's at 3cr.org.au, or through your
whiz bang high tech surveillance copper chopper in the sky.
However you're listening, I hope you're keeping warm on this wintry Melbourne day.
Yeah, that's right. But yeah, Radiothon, you can go online to 3cr.org.au/donate. Check out, there's a bunch of Give Now fundraisers that are up and running, and follow all of the socials. You can call the station to pledge at 94198377.
Or you could just walk in at 21 Smith Street, Fitzroy.
That's right. And I recommend it. Go and get familiar with the station and go and meet some of the awesome crew that keep the station going day to day behind the scenes.
That's right. You could just walk in off the street like I did many, many years ago and have your mind totally blown away to the point where you're in danger of being committed to a psychiatric institution because you're hanging around with the crew at 3CR and hearing the truth.
And they say the truth will set you free.
Yeah, free. But we have some important things we want to talk about today.
We do indeed. We've got a couple of things to cover. But Jake, do you want to start off? Because there's been a bit of word about AUKUS.
AUKUS.
And the US doing a review of AUKUS. And I can't remember if we brushed on this last week or not. But
I can't recall. But I do remember when they first announced AUKUS, we came up with the term the raucous anti-AUKUS caucus.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, the raucous anti-AUKUS caucus seems to be alive and well and living in the United States at the moment. The United States has called a review of AUKUS. But the truth is they haven't actually, I mean, and this has been talked about in the papers a lot, that they're reviewing AUKUS. But they're not. What they're reviewing is Pillar 1 of AUKUS, which is just a very small part, the submarines.
Yeah.
It's just submarines. And here's a point I want to make. We know, you know, whenever you look at a government review, or any organisational review, the first thing to look at is who they've put in charge of the review. And the bloke they've put in charge is the Undersecretary of Defence Policy, a bloke by the name of Elbridge Colby. Now, he's an intelligence community insider, and his career has spanned the gamut of the three-letter acronyms in his work life. His father, William Colby, was the director of the CIA under Presidents Nixon and Ford. And Colby himself has been a critic of the idea of providing subs to Australia because he reckons the US needs all it can make to counteract China. So, I mean, look, we're not going to get subs. We've been saying that. I've been saying that since September 21 when AUKUS was first announced. We're not going to get American nuclear subs and we're not going to build them here. That is not going to happen and it never was. However, here's the point. A lot of people, and a lot of people on the left and a lot of people in the peace communities are saying it'd be good if they, if the Americans walk away from Pillar 1. And I think even, not sure who it was, might have been Keating, said that the US would be doing us a favour.
Mm. And is it just Pillar 1 that's under review?
It's Pillar 1 that's under review, and specifically the submarines. But the point is, and here's the important thing, AUKUS is bigger than the subs. And in order for us, even for the subs, in order for us to get the subs, a whole lot of preconditions had to be first met. And those preconditions have been met. Things like extension of the force posture review, which is about rotating an increased number of Australian troops, American troops, through Australian bases. What's being called now, we used to say interoperability, but now Richard Marles, more on the gormless twat in a little bit, is now using the term interchangeability. Now, the important thing is an interoperability means that, say, two submarines or whatever can work, two different parts from the Australian and the US forces can work together. Interchangeability means that a US sub or an Australian sub or a frigate or a cannon or a tank or a soldier or a gun can be changed easily, one for another. So, in effect, what it's saying, it is the same force.
Mm.
Because if it can be just as easily interchanged between an Australian and American one, it's the same thing.
It doesn't matter which is which, just like Australia being listed, and I know we bang on about this, as a domestic source.
As a domestic source. Now, that's another thing. One of the things that need to happen for AUKUS, for us to get submarines, is we had to have a review of our manufacturing technologies. And it's particularly because the Americans insisted that we place restrictions on which nationals, and we've done a whole show on this in the past, can work on defence technologies and dual-use technologies, which is anything. This microphone I'm talking to you through could be classified as a dual-use technology.
Yeah, a PlayStation 2 was classified as a dual-use technology because the GPU processor in it was...
GPU.
The GPU processor within a PlayStation 2 could... give high-resolution images at such a fast rate that it could be used in military technologies. So it can be. Edulius technology is basically any technology.
That's right. So all of you three here listeners out there with teenage kids sitting in their bedroom at the moment, go and give them a hurry up for playing with dual-use technologies. So we've instituted reviews, we've made laws, and we've made incredible fines, 6 months, $10,000 for companies, organisations or individuals that allow people who aren't in an authorised nationality, I'm talking to you, all you Maltese folks out there, to work on Australian defence technologies. It isn't going to have an impact on our manufacturing sector. It's also about research, who we could research, who could be in the classes researching on these technologies. So we've put those in place. We had to put in place a licence-free environment so that we can transfer military equipment between the US and Australia, and the US, Australia and the UK, without any paperwork, without any red tape. Excuse me. This is what's enabled us, for example, as I've banged on before about why electro-optic systems, why Albanese can say we don't export weapons to Israel, because electro-optic systems transfer their stuff made in Australia to a very small branch they've got based in the United States, and they send it to Israel. And we're now finding out that it may not even go to the United States. It might just be transferred to the United States company in American holding bonded warehouse in Australia. But we could honestly say we don't sell weapons to Israel. So that's already in place. We've already got the United States have changed their laws. So as Mercedes just said, Australia is seen as a domestic source. So you make something in Australia or you pull some rare earth mineral out of the ground and it is exactly the same as far as US law goes as if it was manufactured or pulled out of the ground in the United States.
Mm.
All these things, whether we now get a nuclear submarine or not, is irrelevant. We're building nuclear submarine facilities. And so there are going to be US and UK nuclear-powered and nuclear-armed submarines operating out of Australian waters, whether it's got an Australian flag stamped on its ass or a Southern Cross bloody tramp stamp. Who gives a shit?
Well, and it wasn't long after the AUKUS pact was signed back in 2021 that the first US nuke sub was docked in just off the coast in Western Australia.
Just, US and UK subs, the Astute itself.
Yes, yeah, very...
The Astute itself came in.
It was within a couple of months.
It was...
From memory.
It was, you know, to my mind, it was already on its way here.
Yeah.
It was already on its way here. Now, we've also got American submariners, and it's not just submariners, it's the law has been changed so that American troops can embed with Australian troops. We've got American defence officials overseeing the whole naval submarine acquisition project. We've got Australian military operating with Americans, with the American forces. We don't know where, if America does get involved in this situation in against Iran, which we'll more on soon, there's a very good chance there'll be some Australian personnel working in there too. We are now 100% committed part of the United States global warfighting effort. So whether we get nuclear submarines or not is irrelevant. And then the other thing, sorry, I'm raving on.
What? You're raving on a Friday rave.
The other thing I want to point out is all this, the information, the targeting information. We've rabbited on about it before. You've heard it before. It's coming through Pine Gap in Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how this relates to AUKUS is when the AUKUS announcement was made, the chief, the head of every Australian spy agency was present at the announcement. The heads of the military weren't. The heads of the spy agencies were. And to see how important that all is to AUKUS, you know, the Just got to touch on this. Maybe we'll go into this another time. Some years ago, I did a show on all the various spy agencies, intelligence agencies in Australia. But there's just been a review of the the review into Australia's intelligence community. It was announced in 2023. It was undertaken 2024. It was released in March this year. And they talk about AUKUS extending the role of the Five Eyes in Australia, and talking about how important the AUKUS and the it is for AUKUS and the intelligence network to work together. So we have this thing called the Five Eyes, which you're aware of. We're providing this information. So until we dismantle that, as I say, the fact whether we get submarines, whether we don't get submarines, who gives a shit?
And I guess, you know, it also the Five Eyes Alliance is looking at expanding the intelligence that is fed into the Five Eyes Alliance, and where it goes to, Israel is included in that as well.
That's right. That's right. We've said it before. Edward Snowden released a memorandum of understanding between the NSA and Department 8 T200 for transfer of all raw data. So everything here. And what are we talking about, raw data?
Oh, well, actually, I just had one thing that might be a bit of the forest for the trees situation, but I kind of just want to go back to when we're talking about his gormlessness himself, Richard Marles, talking about interchangeability as opposed to interoperability. Yeah. And I kind of, it's just a thought here, but when we did a show a little while ago on defence exports and the treaty, the US-Australian treaty,
the bilateral treaty on defence exports, yeah,
and we spoke about the term re-export as a redefinition of a term within that treaty, which is why Albanese feels safe enough to say that we don't export arms, is because through that treaty, re-export means that the US can re-export anything that is sent from Australia, which is now a domestic source, without Australia having to know about it.
That's right.
And so thinking about the redefining what words are, just like we saw the rules-based order come into the security vernacular as something, and now I'm just,
GRBO.
Trying to see or think about now that this term interchangeability is going to be already started to be used, what we're going to see in policy coming from here in that shift of what interoperability, where it's formerly been interoperability and now interchangeability. And sort of like, I think something to keep an eye on is how much that word will just come into the defence and security apparatus.
That's a very valid point, Mercedes. We're really going to need to keep our ears and our eyes open for that word, interchangeability. I mean, it can be used, we could say the Australian Labor Party and the Australian Liberal Party once upon a time were interoperable, but now they're interchangeable.
Yeah. Well, and just as, on what we were talking about, interchangeability. It's gone.
Richard Marles, his gormlessness, made the announcement, a wonderful announcement. You may have even missed it. It was made so offhand that he said that I'm not going to use his exact words because I haven't got them in front of me, but he said that if the United States went to war with China, Australia would play a significant role in that. We have our defence minister, contrary to official government policy, stating that Australia will play a role in an American war on China. Now,
would that be considered crossing the floor?
Oh, it's not crossing his T's and dotting his I's, I'll tell you that much. But, I don't know what would have happened to him back in Geelong Grammar if he came out with such a thoughtless faux pas. Maybe he would have got paddled across the arse with his headmaster's Crocs or something. But maybe Albanese will give him a good spanking when he gets back. Well, he's back in the country, is he, Albo? Is he back here or is he?
Well, I don't know. I think he'll be coming back with his tail between his legs after old Orange Hair himself refused to see him.
After he got his own spanking.
Did they actually meet?
They didn't meet, mate. They didn't meet. Now there's talk about him going over to Europe and trying to doorstop the orange one over there. But who knows? It seems like, here's the thing. under the Biden administration, they kept talking up AUKUS and about how important it is. Trump isn't even aware of AUKUS. They never use it in their Shangri-La dialogues. They never used the term once.
Yeah, and I guess it's maybe possible, you know, prior to the Shangri-La dialogues, Pete Hegseth was, you know, trying to give Richard Miles a nudge to increase the defence budget, which Miles hasn't denied.
Yeah.
You know, that they would look into.
Yeah.
But, you know, maybe
5% rather. 5% of GDP.
Was it 5%?
Yeah, that's what he wants. He wants 5%. I mean, the world was outraged a few years ago in Trump's first administration when he was calling for 2.5%.
Yeah.
Now he's calling for 5%, and we go, yeah, sure, maybe, Don.
Maybe. Maybe we can do that for you. Yeah. But we did, talking about data and surveillance and what he's going through Pine Gap and the expansion of the surveillance network. I'm just like, we know, you know, at last year, in Gaza last year, when the Israelis sent in and the flower massacre that everybody knows about, that everyone heard about and the world was shocked by.
If you didn't, they were handing out flour and then just open fire on.
And then just open fire. That's happening on a daily basis in Gaza at the moment at the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation's for, I think, three now aid distribution sites. There's almost 400 Palestinians have been murdered while getting aid, and that's happening on a daily basis. And so, you know, whilst obviously there's a lot of talk about of Israel's bombing Iran, and
so there should be,
absolutely. But yeah, just that this is happening on a daily basis, and that it doesn't even cop a mention. It's like the shifting of that narrative.
Yeah.
That this is not even that Albanese, Penny Wong, who are suggesting that they care about the dire humanitarian situation, but they are not saying a word, nor are, you know, hardly any Australian media outlets talking about Israel opening fire on Palestinians seeking aid from the Mossad-funded Gaza Humanitarian Foundation that it's US-backed and Israeli government-backed.
GHF.
GHF. And so,
it sounds more to me like GBH, to be fair.
Well, so Gaza Humanitarian Foundation has come under a lot of scrutiny, and rightly so, because it sort of is ignoring its private, it's a private aid distribution, quote unquote, enterprise that is not working with the many other long-standing aid networks that exist in Gaza and in Palestine, and it's a relatively new company. The CEO and founder is a bloke by the name of Jake Woods, who prior to the GHF entering Gaza, resigned and said that they weren't able, I don't have the exact words in front of me, but it was that the project wasn't aligned with the humanitarian principles. But we're going to talk a little bit about the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation. And
look, let's with Jake Wood, He was an all-American boy. I mean, he played football for the Pleasant Valley High School, for Christ's sake, you know. He was a Marine. He had a distinguished military career. Not what you or I would call a nice bloke. He founded Team Rubicon with other veterans.
I think eight of them went into Haiti in 2010, just decided to pack up some stuff and go into Haiti in 2010, unaligned.
And even he has pulled out of this GHF for humanitarian, for moral reasons.
And so Jake Woods was the founder of a mob called Team Rubicon that we just spoke about.
Yep.
And Team Rubicon, there's another person on. So GHF don't have much of a online presence, but David Burke, who is the chief operating officer of Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, was also part of Team Rubicon. And Team Rubicon, as they say, has become one of the world's, quote, most innovative disaster response NGOs. And back in 2012, It was Hurricane Sally.
Sandy.
Hurricane Sandy. Thank you. Yes. In Hurricane Sandy, was the integration of Team Rubicon's disaster relief efforts with the technology company Palantir. And so what Palantir and Team Rubicon and Palantir partnered up, and Palantir provided for free, donated the technology, which had been at that time was used by the Defense Department, all the US military industrial complex, for data analysis, for tracking, for targeting, and combined all of those things, donated that same technology to Team Rubicon to undergo and integrated it into Palantir phones and iPads to track and map in disaster zones. And so Team Rubicon, since 2012, have partnered with Palantir, integrated the technology into their operations, and to a point where Team Rubicon are providing training to, they've got globally over 80,000 staff, providing training in Palantir technology to people who work for Team Rubicon. And the now former executive director of Gaza Humanitarian Foundation and the founder, but also David Burke, who's also an ex-military, ex-Marine Corps, is the chief operating officer who also oversaw programs in Team Rubicon that brought in Palantir as the tech. So we can assume that Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, the way that they're undertaking their operations, is integrating Palantir technologies. And the only way we know that, you know, this operation, which is supported by the US, which the US are now looking at giving them, I think, $500 million, supported by the Israeli government, and the technology that they're using is surveillance technology by Palantir, which is a company that is looking and seeking at the moment to overhaul the way the US Department of Defense, bringing together?
Pull all their data systems together. Yeah, Palantir are doing that. And Palantir, I mean, and look.
We've only got a couple minutes left. We just looked at the time.
We could go on about this forever, but we just want to say, I guess, to because we've only got a couple of minutes left, I mean, you know, Palantir, Team Rubicon, the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation, it's all being funded by Mossad. That's the bottom line as well. And so they're laundering money. So they're creating a humanitarian crisis. Then they're going in and look, from the days when the Gaza Humanitarian Foundation was first being talked about last November, there were people talking about this is a problem because of you're building concentration camps with biometrics.
Mm.
And that's why Jake Wood left. It's always been set up from when it was first thought of to be another weapon of war under the guise of humanitarian assistance.
Yep, and it's been done before, and this is what we're seeing. You can only assume that this data that Palantir is collecting and mapping of starving Palestinians that are coming to seek aid, that are being fired upon by the IOF, that have private security, US private security companies sending ex-vets over to be armed at these places, gathering biometric data on Palestinians, starving Palestinians seeking aid. That's what it is there for, and providing that intelligence through Palantir's broad scope data surveillance and intelligence network.
Yeah, and that's it. That's who it is. It is the same people.
It's the same people.
When you go through their list of advisors, you got, you know, even David Petraeus is on the board, the general who was in charge of the occupation of forces in Iraq. They're all there.
But that's all we've got time for. It is still Radiothon, so if you've pledged, don't forget to follow through with your pledges. Keep calling, keep tuning in. Go to 3cr.org.au/donate. Reach into your pockets and keep Radical Radio on air for another year and many years to come.
Talk to you more next week.